Welcome to Coochie Conversations, where we give you the real on all things women's health, spirituality, and motherhood. Empowering women to have sovereignty over themselves, we shine light on the disparities that women face daily as divine feminine beings. So steep your favorite tea, roll up your favorite smoke blend, and tune into this week's episode of Coochie Conversations. Peace, y'all. This is your girl, Bianca Pittman, aka Divine Mother, your Coochie Shiro, giving you a fresh Coochie Conversations episode. Today, I have two lovely guests, my wonderful manager, Joanne, and longtime friend, Nurse Kenya. Today, we'll be talking about Western medicine, working in the medical field, and all things in between. Joanne and Kenya, please introduce yourselves.
Hi, guys. I'm back. I'm super excited for this episode. I can't wait to pick Nurse Kenya's brain.
Hi, I'm Kenya. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a nurse for 6 years in the emergency department, and I am here to share any and everything that I can.
Well, thank you for being on our show today, Kenya. I've known Kenya for a very long time. I've watched her grow up, and now she's this wonderful nurse who's been changing lives in the medical field. And I just wanted to have her on today. You know, on our platform, we often talk about Black maternal health rate and just the medical field and women's health and things. And what better interview to have than to have someone close to home who works in this field, who's also, you know, a mother. So yes, we are very, very thankful to have you today, Kenya. So since I have known you for so long, what has made you become a nurse?
What's the why?
our last episode was about remembering your why, in business and in life. You know, sometimes we get discouraged and things like that. And it's like, we always have to go back to that why to give us that motivation to keep going. You know, sometimes we feel defeated and it's like every day is not rainbows and butterflies. And I'm sure every day is not rainbows and butterflies in the medical field either. So what is your why?
So my why is just my like genuine compassion for caring for people. And that stemmed from me helping to take care of my grandfather at a very young age. He was very ill. And instead of bringing him to a nursing home, we care for him at home, and we had home health aides coming in too. So that's what sparked my interest in healthcare. And, you know, everyone that I know is caring, like my friends, but I just feel like caring for people that are ill was something that I became passionate about. So I decided to make a career out of it.
That's beautiful. I feel like, you know, I'm around a lot of healers and nurturers as well. And people always still ask me, like, when are you going to go to school? Like, when are you going to go to become an OBGYN and this and that? And it's like, I don't have the desire to work in a hospital. I don't have the desire to, I'm really much into the Eastern way of living and things like that. And I just feel like with the medical field, it's lacking a lot of the feminine energy that we have as far as using our intuition and being empathetic. And even just in my pregnancy, or just growing up, you know, you go into the doctor, the nurse and the doctor comes into the room and they try to tell you about your body in 10 minutes and you're supposed to just do what they say. And I just feel like there was a kind of a missing component in the medical industry in regards to that connection that we need. And this is why I chose to have a doula and a midwife in my pregnancy, because I get to work with this person for 9-10 months and really get to connect with them in a way that I can't connect to my OB when I go into the doctor. Could you relate?
Yes. Unfortunately, it's just a reoccurring theme where doctors and nurses are in and out of patients' room just because our patient load is so large. You know, as much as we would like to spend time getting to know our patients on a deeper level, you know, it's hard when you have, you know, X amount of patients who also need to be seen. So I guess that's where the tug of war comes in between doctors needing to spend time with patients, but they can't. I have a friend that's in nursing school now, and when she was doing her clinical rotations, she literally said she had to like talk faster to like try to like make up her time to see other patients. And that's insane. You know what I mean? Or like not giving patients the opportunity to like ask the questions that they need to, because, you know, they're cut short. You know, it's
so, is there, because I have heard that, like, you know, there's a time frame, like I said 10 minutes because I heard that it was like 7 to 10 minutes of a doctor being in a patient's room before it's like you got to be on to the next.
I'm sure there is a time, but I don't know what that is, but I'm pretty sure like they teach you to, like, you know, you have this window of time, you know. Yeah.
If you can create like a magical subgroup within nursing where you can like master everything that you want to and still offer care, what would that like model look like to you?
In the setting of the emergency department?
Yeah.
So like my hospital utopia would be if I had, let's say, a ratio of like 2-to-1 patients. Obviously it would be different based on the patient's acuity, but seriously, like time to like sit and talk to the patient, make them feel comfortable and not feel rushed. And I had this opportunity like last week at work, like once, this happens once in a blue moon, where like you can literally like be a nurse and not come in and out of the room. And I had like a patient like tell me, you know, like, thank you, I'm so glad you're my nurse, like you made me feel safe and blah blah blah. And it's so unfortunate that I don't get the opportunity to do that because of the amount of patients that I have. So if I can have a safe patient ratio where I can do my job and be a nurse and care for people and, you know, develop a rapport and a relationship with them, I would love that. But I don't get the opportunity to do that all the time.
Do you think the disparities are correlated directly to the time frame you have with the patients? Like if you had a little more time, you could be, you know, be a little bit more helpful in the diagnosis or the care package?
The issue, it truly boils down to staffing. The hospital, they can't keep their staff. So unfortunately, nurses have patient ratios that are unsafe and they're too large. If the hospital would be able to like retain their staff and not have these high turnover rates, then I feel like nursing care would be a lot better than it is now. But nobody's staying in the hospital anymore.
Why do you think that is? And where do you think they're going? I have an idea.
I was about to say that. Like, why do you think that the turnover is so rapid?
Well, I will tell you, with the new generation of nurses that are coming in now, they're not like putting up with this. When they see, okay, you're coming into work and okay, you have 10 patients, good luck. They're not taking that. They're leaving. I have one nurse who completely left nursing and went into real estate. Yeah, it's just too much. A lot of people are leaving and like opening up their own med spas. A lot of nurses are leaving the bedside and like getting like a higher degree. Like not enough people are staying at the bedside just because we're overworked. It's hard. It's like hard on you, like mentally and physically, emotionally. You know, it's tough.
So, and you're a traveling nurse, so you get to go to different hospitals for certain periods of time. And what has been your best experience and what has been like your least best experience?
So I'll start off with my worst experience. Maybe you can end on a good note. So my worst experience was coming to New Jersey after being a nurse for 2 years in Atlanta. In Atlanta, our ratios were 3-to-1 because our acuity was so high, right? So it was manageable. coming into New Jersey and you're faced with 6 patients, 7 patients, 8 patients, and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I like prioritize my care? Who's going to get my the most attention? Like, who's going to be like left behind? And unfortunately, that's the mindset that you have to have, because you don't have a choice. You can't be in 10 places at one time. You're one person taking care of 10 people. So you don't have a choice but to say, okay, who's my sickest patient? I need to, you know, tend to them. Meanwhile, you have a patient next door who's, you know, like hasn't been changed for hours. I would love to change them, but there's no one there. And it got to a point where I had to take a leave of absence from work because it was emotionally draining to know that like you're responsible for not taking care of someone, like the way that you're supposed to be in the hospital isn't helping you do that. You know what I'm saying? You can't like sustain a career in nursing like that. It's hard.
It's hard when, you know, you love what you do, you have integrity, and, you know, like I said, like you have a lot of compassion for the people that you help. And then you have this, I guess, the financial part of what you're doing just weighing on you all day long. It's like, okay, you know, like I understand you care, but you, like you said, they're about their numbers at the end of the day. Even when we've had coochie conversations about the Black maternal health rate. And I know you're not an OB, but just like how often they prescribe cesareans, and how, you know, when you prescribe a cesarean, it's like twice as much cost as a vaginal birth, but it's really to pay the anesthesiologist, like the quota of the anesthesiologist department. And it's like, you rather give a woman a cesarean just so that you can fund one of your departments that really don't have anything to do with labor and delivery. And this is one of the reasons why I'm having a home birth, because I'm very much, you know, and people try to put their fears on me all the time and experiences about how I choose to birth my child. But, and they're like, oh, I'll pray for you. You know, I'm going to pray for you. I'm like, pray for the women that are having these babies in the hospital. Like, they're the ones who really need your prayers, because it sucks. And I know, did you ever think about being in the OB part of the medical field?
So the first semester of nursing school, we did labor and delivery, which is an unusual like trajectory of like plan, you know, schooling for nursing. But the model at Duke was like, let's take like a healthy population first and then build from sick. So that's why we started with labor and delivery, right? Because this is supposed to be like a healthy group of people, a healthy group of women. And I took a doula class there because they offered it, because I was really interested in it. And I liked the idea of, like midwifery and like natural birth, things like that. And so did my professor. But when I went to the labor and delivery unit at the hospital, it like completely changed me. I'm like, I can't work like this. I guess the nurses at that point, you know, after you've been in the field for X amount of years, you get kind of jaded, and like, you know, the comments that they would say, I'm like, I don't want to work in an environment like this. But I was really interested in the doula class, you know? So, yeah.
Did you feel like it wasn't something like, so basically they kind of turned you off completely from wanting to go that route?
Yeah.
It wasn't something that you felt like you can kind of be that light in the darkness, or like, because like, even as a traveling nurse, since you're like only in a facility for a specific amount of time, you can't really create change because you're not there long enough on certain assignments. So being in the OB department, you don't feel like you could have been an influence of change in some way? Or they were just so like stuck in their ways that it was just not happening.
I feel like from like a registered nurse on the floor, you don't really get the opportunity to like change like a culture, you know, of a unit. And I wish I didn't feel that way, but that was truly my mindset. You know, I just felt like, wow, like if this is just, I'd be in over my head trying to, you know, change the culture here. Yeah, this is unfortunate. And then another thing that kind of deterred me was the fact that when you're a nurse on the labor and delivery unit, like once the baby is born, you essentially have two patients. You have the mom and the baby. So it's kind of like you're like doubling like your responsibility. It's just they put so much on the nurses to a point where they can't enjoy their job. And I don't want to be in a unit like that and be like upset or overworked because it shows, like the patients can feel that.
Absolutely. So how do you feel that the doctors, if you feel this way as a nurse, like how do you feel the doctors must feel? Or do you feel like you do more than what the doctors being a nurse?
I feel like the doctors are overextended too. Because just like the nurses, they have a responsibility for the patients and, you know, they have to make sure that the mom is okay. They have to make sure the baby's okay. It's a, just a lot of responsibility on both ends.
I have a question for Nurse Kenya. Do you notice any health patterns in your different demographics? So like, I know that some as regional as dishes are or regional as trends are or regional as like, you know, music is, are there any regional trends when you travel? Do you see any patterns in each hospital that you visit as far as health is concerned?
So what's unique about my experience in traveling is that each hospital I go to, there's a different demographic there. So at one hospital, a lot of my patient population was like predominantly like white, right? Like rural white. I did not see Black patients there at all. Compared to the hospitals like in the city where you have like a good mix of patients. But I would say across the board, when you're dealing with like labor and delivery patients that come in, I don't see like any differences in the care that's given based on race, which, you know, I'm glad I haven't had that experience, but unfortunately I know like, you know, across the board, it's not that way.
I would think that you would see so many different aspects being in so many different areas and hospitals. So you've been a nurse for 6 years, and how many different hospitals have you worked in?
Six different hospitals.
And obviously in Atlanta, it was more of a Black population?
Yeah, so in Atlanta, there were, and when you're in the city, you have a higher Black population. But then when you get out to like the rural areas, it becomes predominantly white. So I had the experience like working on both ends.
So not speaking on race, but speaking on the influx of patients, what are some of the busiest cities or more overwhelming cities you've experienced?
The busiest, I would say, I've Atlanta, working in Atlanta. Because when I'm in New Jersey, I'm not working like in the city areas right now.
What are some of your favorite experiences that have happened or favorite encounters that you've experienced in the ER?
I think my favorite experience is like the camaraderie. When you're working in the emergency department, like the teamwork surrounding like the nurses, it's my favorite part because, you know, we're all sharing the same goal, you know, like let's take care of this patient. Like we're not going to let, you know, another patient deteriorate because it's not your patient. You know, we help each other out. So across the board, I'm thankful that I've never had the experience where like I felt like left alone or like, oh, like you're new, like good luck. You know, I'm going to worry about myself. It's always like a strong team environment. So that's my favorite part. That's like working as a team.
Do you have a goal retirement age? Like, this is going to be done in a while. I'm going to not do this. I'm going to raise my kids. Like, do you have a, and like, do you have a end game per se, or are you just going to continue to do this? It sounds pretty fascinating to me.
I'm planning my exit out of the emergency department. Like, I'm done. I'm exhausted. Like, I've been thinking of my end goal, and it doesn't involve working in the hospital. I don't know if I want to start like my own like mobile IV clinic, or I thought about opening up my own yoga studio because I'm really into yoga, but I want to focus more on like wellness and like, you know, like holistic care as opposed to like taking care of patients once they're like, you're already sick, you know, you've already have diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, all of the, I want to like prevent it. You know what I mean? Or like kind of nip it in the bud before it gets to that point where you're at the emergency department. I want to keep people out of the emergency department.
I'm such an advocate for preventative care and like holistic wellness. I'm really big on having plant allyship or like, you know, nature take over nurturing me. What is your views on like plant medicine?
And, I was like, say that, especially being in the hospital, like, it's very big pharma, it's very Western based, but is there any way that you could kind of, you know, use your intuition and offer natural suggestions to your patients?
Yeah, what's the balance?
So I will say I am not educated at all on plant medicine, but that sounds like something I would like to read and like educate myself on. You know, I'm very interested in it. But as far as care outside of taking pills and, you know, all of that, I always try to think of things like, how can I put this? For example, say you're coming in to the emergency department and like you're like nauseous, you know what I mean? And you're coming in for like a medication like Zofran that prevents nausea. Instead of taking Zofran, like, did you try like, you know, ginger? Sure. Did you try ginger tea? Like something.
Yes. But are you, is it okay for you to make those suggestions? Like, because I've been told like in the medical field, it's not okay for them to make those suggestions because they're not taught any of that in school. So it becomes more like a liability to them, mm-hmm. as opposed to like, we're supposed to push. And then too, it's, you're not making the hospital any money when you tell somebody to go get some ginger tea or mm-hmm. supplement, you know? So is it like, could you get in trouble for it? Or is it okay?
So typically when I'm doing my discharge teaching, that's like my opportunity to educate the patient on like how they can like manage whatever symptoms they're having at home. So instead of like saying it like from like I'm prescribing you something, like you need to drink 2 cups of ginger tea a day, you can just like broaden it, like, you know, like warm fluids, like tea would help, you know, just keep it like very broad in that respect.
Very surface based. You're not going into it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that, but the reason why I asked your game plan is because I'm surrounded by, you know, women in the medical field. My mom's a nurse. My best friend is in nursing school right now. Her mom is in peds. And I spend time having conversations like these and a little bit more in depth because we're personal friends. And I find that they're all going to like leverage this intellect for a pivot. Like, you know, my best friend mom wants to have her own facility, you know, and my best friend, she wants to open her own clinic where she's offering free care. And that's not integrative medicine. It's more like, I need the degree. I need the paper backing to open a facility of this nature. But I highly doubt that anything she learns is going to be applied because of the nature of the facility. What are some of the hopes that you have for the future as far as your new game plan is concerned that has nothing to do with medicine?
My hope is just to live like a life that's like less stressed, you know, like stress-free. And I feel like given the opportunity to help patients like outside of the hospital is something that would benefit me and other people. I feel like there's so much that you can do to help a person before they get so terminally ill or before they get sick. And I wish that it was a practice in Western medicine where like holistic care was, you know, put on a priority or preventative care, but we're not there yet.
One of my dreams is to open a holistic wellness birthing center. Like,
oh,
I really want to be able to have a like a holistic birthing center, but like also offer like yoni steaming and mm-hmm. offer yoga and, you know, just the mindfulness things that, you know, I'm BU Beauty, so it's like all about everything that I do in my life. I just want to incorporate it into how I help and heal other people. So it's not far-fetched for Joanne to ask you, like, you know, how do you want to, how do you see your end goal? And then you also wanting to incorporate your lifestyle, like you like yoga, mm-hmm. and you know the benefits of yoga. And you know, like if somebody has a yoga practice every day, they won't have high blood pressure. They won't have as much stress on the body and the mind when you're practicing mindfulness techniques. So we might have to collab in some way.
Yeah.
Down the line.
What was the plan all along?
Right.
I'm just building the Avengers here, you know, the wellness Avengers. And there's so many studies and there's so many statistical facts on holistic healing and the terms that they use, and we try not to use the word healing or we try to use preservation or preventative, but in all actuality I believe nature has a more dominant effect on the body than medicine can ever. And I'm excited for the new wave of health professionals that realize that listening to a specific government covering for their model for what citizens should be healthy looks like, as opposed to what innately feels good to the individual. I can speak for dozens and dozens of ailments I probably would have still had if I didn't get to the Ayurvedic or holistic side of my life. Like, I was diagnosed with menopause at 21 years old. I was pregnant. My hormones are spiking. That could be clearly a misdiagnosis. But, you right. know, but going along is like, if you don't listen to those things, especially as a mom, if you don't listen to certain medical advices, you can find yourself in trouble with some other authorities. So what's some encouragement you can give people who are still very much citizens, but still dabble with plant medicine and holistic care?
I would say just don't underestimate the power of nature and honestly, like the power of breath. I feel like people really forget how important it is to just actually like sit and breathe and meditate for a second. It will like clear your mind and kind of just like recenter your body. I had a patient that came in for anxiety. And naturally, we gave him like a anti-anxiety medication. When I discharged him, I was like, you know, seriously, just breathe. Like, take a second. And I like taught him, you know, like breathing in, you know, like the whole like straw method. And, you know, it just really helps. Just give it a try. Just, you know.
For real.
Don't underestimate like the simplicity of like sunlight, going outside, you know.
Grounded, you know, just yes. having your feet in the grass.
This kid is loud because look what I have on my arm. It says breathe. And I put a period because I mean it. That's how old it is. It's blurry. But the point of the matter is I think you're absolutely right on time with just trusting your body to navigate your nervous system more. There's so many big terms like neurodivergent, and there's so many big inflated like diagnoses that follow postpartum and like ADHD and like, you know, there's so many disorders, right? And I think that with you stepping into the next phase of your life, you'll be able to connect with the people that you patron, So I'm excited for what's next for you. I really, really am.
I want to touch on the postpartum, because you're a new mom to a beautiful baby girl. What was your birthing experience like? And like, did you experience postpartum? How did you navigate? Are you, you know, technically, you know, you can still be in postpartum. And then like mentally, like one of our previous episodes was about appreciating your postpartum body. Because a lot of people have this, feel like it's becoming a mental illness in a sense of like feeling the need to have to snap back to the body that you had before childbearing. And as a new mom, you know, I haven't embarked on the postpartum journey yet. I have my own views of how I feel like I'm going to feel, but I don't know exactly how I'm going to feel in the next 3 months. So how did you navigate through all of that?
Well, my birthing experience was a surprise because I had Xena at 36 weeks. Mm-hmm. So when I was having contractions, I didn't know that they were contractions because I've never felt them before. It felt like the gas pains that I would have in the middle of the night. And I was like, wow, I'm having gas during the day. That's weird. But okay, let's just like power through it. So I'm like doing all this stuff at home, like trying to like move and try to like get the gas out for hours. And I'm like, well, maybe like these are contractions. So I called my OB. She's like, you know, if it changes, gets more frequent, like, you know, call back. So I'm like, whatever. So I'm at home, like moving around still. I'm like eating like some like leftover food from like my favorite restaurant. I'm like taking a warm bath, like all this stuff to try to like ease like this gas that I'm having. Finally, around 10 o'clock, this happened like 10 a.m. So 10 o'clock that night, I'm like, okay, let me just go to sleep. The moment I laid down, I was like, I can't lay down. So I went to we ended up going to the hospital, and like, we're taking our time. Jonathan's like, let me just take a shower real quick. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna like pack a bag just in case. By the time I got into the car, I'm like, okay, I'm having contractions now. It took me 12 hours to realize that, like, I was going through labor the entire day. And I had no idea.
So was it not that bad? Like,
I would say, unfortunately, I feel like I have a really high tolerance for pain. And my gas pain during pregnancy was really bad. Like, I would wake up in the middle of the night, like, almost in tears. And that's kind of, like, what it felt like. That gas pain, or I don't know, it was like a mix of gas and constipation. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was
I feel it. I was in labor for 2 days with my daughter, and I thought it was cramping. I'm like, oh, it's the end of my pregnancy, I'm cramping, maybe it's the final stretch. And what do? I get in the cab from Poughkeepsie to Brooklyn.
Did Lemon come on time or early?
She came 2 weeks early.
Okay, so like 40 weeks?
Yeah, I was exactly 40 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Her birthday is supposed to be June 11th.
Oh, okay.
Her birthday is May 22nd.
Wow. You know, I just find it very interesting to hear everybody's experiences and their stories. So then, okay, so you get to the hospital.
Yeah, so I get to the hospital and they tell me that 4 centimeters, and I'm like, I'm pissed because my whole idea was I wanted to labor at home. So when I got to the hospital, I was 4 centimeters dilated, and I was upset because I'm like, oh, I came too early, because my whole idea was that I wanted to labor at home for most of my labor, because I wanted to move how I wanted. I wanted to eat. I wanted to drink. I wanted to do whatever I wanted in my own space, right, and kind of get to the hospital at the last minute. So when they told me I was 4 centimeters, I'm like, oh, man, like, I hope, you know, it doesn't turn into like, oh, let me like rush this. Let me like put you on X amount of drips and try to like get the baby out. You know what I mean? So within an hour, I went from 4 centimeters to 9 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I go there. They ask me if I want an epidural. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I was like, what are my other options? She's like, oh, you can have fentanyl, or they gave me something else, or whatever. So...
No.
You're like scrunching your face up, but I did. I took the fentanyl because at that point my cramps were like really, really bad. They gave me one dose of fentanyl. it did nothing, but I felt like kind of loopy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like loopy after the fentanyl, and it has a short half-life. So after about an hour or two, the fentanyl like wears off completely, right? And at that point, I'm 9 centimeters. An hour has gone by, I'm 9 centimeters, and the fentanyl wears off. So I'm on the bed, and I'm like, I'm ready to push. Like, you feel that urge to push, and your natural urge is to, like, you know, like, get up. Or like squat or whatever. And I'm like, Jonathan, like, get whoever else in here so we can like push this baby out. So they check my cervix again, and I'm 10 centimeters. And I start pushing, and they're like, okay, like, get lay down. Like, you can't squat. And I'm like, looking at them, like, you know, you're wrong. Like,
right.
But they literally, they don't let you sit up and squat. And, you know, I'm, like, kind of tiny. So I'm, like, I could fit on the bed and squat.
Right.
I'm, like, kind of, like, in an inverted position, pushing. And luckily, I was able to push Xena out, like, without any complications or difficulty. But looking back on my experience, I wish that I would have been able to squat. And I feel like maybe if I squatted...
I feel like it's so counterproductive to, like, have a woman on her back.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe I wouldn't have had to, like, work as hard. And I feel like maybe I wouldn't have, like, tore as much as I did.
That was my next question.
Yeah. I think I had a second or third degree tear. I know that they ended up having to, like, tie in muscle. So I think it was a third degree tear. But you know, Dina came out, she was happy and healthy, so I was happy. But
would you do it differently next if you was to have another baby?
I definitely have my baby at home or a birthing center. Unfortunately, in Atlanta, they have one birthing center.
Oh wow, it's probably packed, it's probably like a waiting
yeah. Because I wanted to do that, and I couldn't. And I don't think they accepted my insurance, because I had Medicaid. But, yeah.
I have a whole thing about insurance and, like, healthcare professionals, and how there's a portion of the proceeds that's supposed to go to your paycheck, because the hospitals and facilities don't pay y'all the way I should be paid out. And the fact that you guys, like endure this extreme amount of labor just to ensure care for the citizens of whatever city you're in. And I just have this huge beef, this huge bone to pick with HMOs. Like, where do you stand with insurance companies and the coverage they give your patients?
I feel like insurance is, it's horrible. I mean,
they tried to treat my brother's wife $70,000 to have her baby, and they charged an increment, so then they got another bill of like $30,000, and he's like, what is these charges? And they couldn't be accounted for.
That's crazy. And on my hospital bill, obviously I didn't have to pay anything because I had Medicaid, but without it, for my vaginal delivery, the bill was over $5,000. It was like five something.
And if you were cesarean, it would have been like 50.
Mm-hmm. Or if I would have gotten the epidural, it would have been like,
right.
You know, who knows?
I think it's what's more appalling to me is the cost and the specificity of those costs when it comes to childbearing. And every single person on this planet came from a vagina.
Right.
Cesarean canal. We all came from women, and I have this like this deep like desire to make like menstrual products free and healthcare for women free.
Yeah, I can't wait to be in a position to just, you know, donate a bunch of products.
Take care of women.
And like, you know, I live in California, and I live really close to Skid Row, and I see all these women. It breaks my heart to see homeless women and just think about them being on their period and, you know, how are they washing themselves? How are they taking care of themselves? And I have donated products to women on Skid Row. But, like, I just want to be able to do it like on a monthly basis. Like,
yeah,
because it's just really sad how we are the givers of life and like just how we're treated overall in the medical field, just being women in general. It's really sad. This was a great conversation. Thank you so much for your insight,
Nurse Kenya. Yeah, you didn't have to grow. You gave us some tea. You gave us some things to think about.
For real.
And now we have to open a facility.
Okay?
Seriously.
It's needed. It's necessary. You know, when I went to the doctor my first visit and I mentioned a home birth, they immediately tried to talk me out of it. And it was like, oh, well, you can do a birthing center. And, like, I just never spoke about it again. Like, they swear they're delivering my baby, but they're not. Because I just felt like, I don't know, I just felt weird about it. And it's like, you can't share but so much information and feel like you're protected.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Because, you know, back in the day, your ancestors were not born in hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? And it just gave me a very much reverence for birth workers and doulas and midwives. And, you know, me and you, Kenya, have had side conversations about, you know, you seeing how passionate I am about it. And it's like, I think as simple, I thought that I was too squeamish to be a doula or a midwife. Because I've had friends who are, and it's like, oh, they be talking about the amniotic fluid getting on their face and all that stuff, and it's just like, ugh. But at the same time, I watch these birthing videos, and it's a very beautiful thing to witness. So as nervous as I haven't been nervous this whole time, but now I didn't even know about the degree of the perineum tears until recently. Like, and it, you go on my text message, I was just talking to my doula about it. So I'm like, what if I tear? Like, what am I going to do? But then also knowing that, like, I've been doing a lot of things in this pregnancy to try and prevent a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's made me passionate about just sharing my birthing experience with women who, like, I was pregnant with this other girl at the same time. She just had her baby. I'm like, are you exercising? And she's like, oh, no, girl. Like, I used to exercise every day before pregnancy, but I haven't exercised in 9 months. And I'm like, how do you think that you don't have to exercise during your pregnancy? Like, but she just had her baby and she ended up getting a cesarean. So I'm like, you know, certain things I feel like could be prevented. I'm like, you drinking your raspberry leaf tea? She's like, oh, no, I don't like that stuff. I'm like, okay. Like, I just say things, throw it out there. If you catch it, you catch it. If you don't, you know, whatever. But I just know that I've been doing a lot of things in this pregnancy to try and prevent a lot of things. And I just know that I did my part.
Yeah.
You know? So I thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Yes, I really appreciate your insight and thank you for your transparency. It's not an easy field to navigate. I mean, like, nursing is such a big, broad umbrella. But as a woman and as a mom, I just want to thank you for serving us. Yes. And thank you for representing us. You're so classy. You're so well-spoken. And like, if Bianca sanctions you, you're sanctioned in my books. So I just want to appreciate your time. And just thank you for sharing. You know, I know it's difficult as a mom to share your healing journey postpartum. And, you know, just especially talking to another pregnant woman, you never want to, like, deflect or anything like that. So just thank you for being so open. And I wish you the most lucrative and financially abundant success
that
has to offer. And I hope that you get to shine your light in many, many places that is suitable and aligned with your mission or whatever spirit has for you.
Yeah, because we're about to open up a birthing center.
Yeah. We need it. We need it so bad.
Our daughters need it. And I think that, you know, it's like, we can talk about these things all day, but where I'm coming from is that we're the new ancestors, right? So if we're not having these conversations and we're not pivoting and leveraging our skills, what would our daughters have? And what examples do they have to take things serious? Like, we're women and we want to take women's care seriously. So we're showing up. Showing up in your profession, showing up in your purpose, showing up in whatever you do is the best example for our daughters. So again, Nurse Kenya, I commend you. Your daughter has a great example to look up to.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, both of you guys have daughters. And I swore that Seven was a girl for a very long time until 3 days before I found out he was a boy. And it was because I really wanted to be able to pour into my daughter and just show her all these modalities and things that I've learned along the way. But I also realized that God gives you what you need and not exactly what you want. And had I had a daughter right now, I probably wouldn't be able to pour into my collective of women the way I do. So God has given me the balance, and I'm just going to be able to teach him how to build space for women, you know. And there's a lot of boys coming into this world right now, and I feel like they're going to change the narrative. So for me to be able to guide one into this realm is an honor and a pleasure. And if I'm meant to have a girl in the future, then you already know she's going to be well off as well. So. Yeah. So I love you guys, and I thank all of you for tuning into Coochie Conversations today. Awesome. Please like, share, and comment. And I usually have an affirmation of the day.
Ooh, I got one.
Go ahead, girl.
I want to remind everybody to erect an altar within.
Erect an altar within.
Erect the altar within. Take care of yourself. Make yourself.
And know that all the healing is inside of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because had I not trusted my intuition, I would never be pregnant right now. I would never even have a period. You know? So, yes. Erect the altar inside of you.
Yes. Erect the altar within.
Yeah. Ashay. Love you guys. Thank you for tuning in. See you all next week.
Yes.